I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome back to Radio Times. Tap dance can be traced back to the slaves from West Africa and the immigrants from Ireland. It grew in popularity in vaudeville, in musical theater, movies, and clubs in the 20th century, and has been enjoying a revival in recent years. Our guest, Michelle Dorrance, is one of the most exciting and innovative tap dancers and choreographers working today. The MacArthur Foundation awarded her a grant this year for, quote, breathing new life into a uniquely American art form in works that combine the musicality of tap with the choreographic intricacies of contemporary dance. She and her dance company, Dorrance Dance, are performing at the Prince Theater in Philadelphia from Wednesday, December 2nd through Sunday. This is part of a dance affiliates presentation, and she joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. And Michelle Dorrance, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on all your awards and successes. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Your mom was a ballerina. Your dad was a soccer coach, or
That's right.
I guess still is a soccer coach.
Indeed.
For women's soccer.
That's right.
So was it inevitable you would be doing something with your feet?
That's what we all say. I did. I actually studied both ballet and played soccer growing up from a very early age. So that one thing I've done is use my feet quite a bit.
You apparently have flat feet, and that doesn't work so well for ballet. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. That is, yeah. I knew, actually, both my parents they're both so incredibly adept at what they do. I knew at a very young age that I didn't have the natural flexibility or the feet, literally, for ballet. And I knew also at a very young age that I wasn't an international caliber soccer player.
Oh. Yeah. You were good, but not that good?
Yeah. He used to coach the national team. I'd always ask him if there was anyone on the team who was as slow as I was. I'm quick, but I'm not like 100-yard dash fast, so... And he said, yeah, there's one woman. I'm like, who? Shannon Higgins, who's like this exceptional center midfielder at the time in the 80s. And I go, oh, okay, so I could be Shannon Higgins, but maybe that's it. And also I had like a one in a million chance of succeeding in that department. But yeah, I did pursue everything, you know, that was laid before me, but tap dance was my love so early on.
And how early on? A couple of years old?
Yeah.
Toddler?
Honestly, no, I think I started when I was four, and I knew, I don't really remember a period of time where it wasn't my favorite thing to do, like as a kid or a teenager or an adult. It's always been my passion since I can remember.
Which means you probably tapped all the time. I mean, were you always sort of doing things with your feet?
Yeah, no, I think either that or I love playing music and making music. My mom always tells me this story of, like, I memorized an album of Christmas songs when I was 2 years old. Like, I always loved, you know, that kind of thing, or that, whether it was a challenge or just like an absolute love. So yeah, and I think the musical element in tap is what really drew me to it. Of course, I love dance and I love movement, but that, I think that synthesis is what makes it so like raw and so inspiring.
And we're talking, and in many ways tap is movement and music.
Yeah,
I mean,
at the
tap
same time.
Is music, it's
exactly.
Percussion.
Yeah, exactly.
You had a teacher, a guy named Gene Medler,
yeah,
in North
Gene
Carolina, right?
He's incredible.
In what way? And what did he teach you?
Well, first of all, Gene, and people are like, oh, it's too late for me to start tap dancing. And I'm like, no. My mentor and, you know, major educator through my, you know, first 18 years or whatever, 10 years of tap dance, was Gene Medler, who didn't start until he was 27.
Wow.
When he started dancing. And he's one of the best educators in the world in the form. And he started a youth tap ensemble, which was really like nothing else on the face of the earth at the time. He sought out, you know, professional dancers to set work on us from literally age 8 all the way through, you know, 18 when I graduated from high school. So I had exposure to these incredible choreographers in so many different styles, and that's also what he sought out for us inside of the tap community. So, you know, you mentioned the golden age earlier of the form, and we had access as a teenager to the Nicholas Brothers and to Jimmy Slide and to Buster Brown, and, you know, younger masters, you know, at the time, Diane Walker, Brenda Buffalino, these dancers who, you know, really formed what we know as tap dance today through the mid-century. And so that he also exposed us to that is also really exceptional and part of, you know, the reason I know the community the way I do and I am the dancer I am.
Maybe an unfair question to ask you, but what would you say your style, what is it that you bring to tap dance that you think is uniquely your own?
Oh, that's always really hard to answer.
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, I think what I can say is that the some of the people I just mentioned, among countless more, honestly, had such an impact on me that I feel like I'm from a generation that got to learn from so many different masters and stylists that, you know, and I think really Savion Glover is the big example of the, you know, young prodigy who all of this information and art and history was poured into and really was a revolutionary, both rhythmically and technically. So that I am also a student of his and a student of these, you know, incredible masters, like basically our ancestors while they were still alive, lends us to explore a lot of different directions at once, or allows those things to sort of form and, you know, for us to embody both the history and these innovations and explorations that were happening on a micro level. So I think that moving into the forum now, there's so many possibilities. We want to do everything at once, like all the time.
Well, when I think of, even when you go back to the, you know, to the olden days of the 20th century, you think of solo dancers or perhaps dancing in duo.
Right.
What I hear, and actually I want to play just a clip from a shared evening. This is an excerpt of something you did, a Dance Space Project 2011. So it goes back a couple of years, but this is a group of people dancing together, dancing your choreography.
Yeah.
Let's give that a listen, and then we'll talk some more. Do we have that? Yes? We're getting it? And we have it now. Okay, go ahead. This is Dance Space. An excerpt from a shared evening, Dance Space Project 2011. What's great is Tap works on the radio really well.
I love it.
I mean, I'm sorry that people can't see it, although we posted some things on our Facebook page so people can see what you all are doing.
Awesome.
But it works on the radio.
But it's one of the great things about the forum, and I think what the reason most of us or a large number of us are drawn to it is that you're making music through your dance. So I love listening to it.
Do you?
I often perform, I'll do a performance, a solo inside of, and I will in this upcoming show here actually in Philadelphia in the dark. Because when you're watching dance, there's so much that you experience visually that you're not necessarily focused on the sophistication or nuance or tone or syncopation or some of, you know, those elements inside of the sound. But it's funny listening to that. I haven't given it that much attention every time I've watched that clip. I'm watching it as well. But isolating just the aural experience allows me to adjust. I'm like, oh, that was cleaner than I thought it would be. That was not the right time, you know. And I actually still remember that choreography. And I also love the two dancers that I'm dancing with in that work. So it's fun to explore listening to the nuances of a different artist's sound or a group of people. Like that, you can hear the difference. I lived in a brownstone in the Bronx where the entire brownstone was tap dancers. So underneath me, it was a great dancer, Idelli Gassell. Above me was Kendrick Jones and Joseph Wiggin. And my roommate was Dolores Sanchez, another tap dancer. So I would wake up in the morning to Joseph or Kendrick dancing, and it would sometimes take me as long as 20 seconds, but never longer, to figure out which one of them it was.
Just knowing from their footwork.
Yeah. Their sound, the way they approach the floor, the weight with, you know, which they approach the floor, the nuance, the decisions that they want to make rhythmically. So I love that element. Like every single tap dancer who is pursuing this as an art form, you're equally as responsible as a musician as you are as a dancer.
And you have to think about things like floor and, you know, floors. We have a platform set up for you, which we're going to do in just a couple of minutes. But it seems to me floors, every floor has their own unique kind of sound.
Yeah, this is true. And we often talk about what kind of wood we want to dance on, because wood is, you know, really our instrument of choice. So oak has a deeper, richer tone. Maple is really bright. if you get into some of the softer woods, you're not going to have the same range and tone as you do with a hardwood. There's a Brazilian hardwood that people love, but it's harder to come by because it's an import. Some people love dancing on bamboo. So, yeah, like even inside of that, there's a lot of nuance.
Do you have a favorite kind of surface that you like to
use? I love oak. I love the more recently I've been exploring that sound. But yeah, we always say oak or maple. Like that's generally like our answer that we have an answer. I'm sure it seems funny to some people, but no. There recently I've fallen in love with the sound of a nice oak wood floor.
Have you checked out the floor at the Prince? Do you know what you're dealing with?
Yeah, no. Stage Step is providing, I think, an oak, if not a maple floor. I'm going to find out today. Actually, when after this, I'll go to tech rehearsal. So. Looking forward to that.
How do you prepare for a show? Are there certain exercises, things you do?
Oh my gosh. Well, in a show like this, we're rehearsing a ton of choreography. And that's actually really important to me. I am interested inside of my company working with my dancers individually as improvisational soloists. And that really is the way the form developed. Like we were talking about before you mentioned this, solos, duos, things like that. And really the form has been innovated by solo technicians and musicians. And there are, you know, that's not to say there are incredible choreographers throughout the history of tap, especially, you know, from the 70s on in company work and things like that. But it's equally as important to me to create compositions and choreography as it is to show my dancers off as soloists mm-hmm. and give them their own improvisational voice. But I really like to craft the, you know, the context in which I place a certain voice and let them explore. So, in preparation for a show, to get back to your question,
sure.
There are countless hours of refining that both musically and physically. And then also, you know, directing what you really want out of a particular moment if it's improvisational. Like sometimes I'm like, no, I'd really love for you to interact with this person. Or no, I want you to isolate this person and really just focus on what you're creating or whatever it is. So, and a few dancers in this particular cast just had to learn so much material.
Oh,
I'm so
right?
proud of them.
Oh,
yeah.
Good for them.
This show here in Philly is like no other show we've done. We're doing a ton of different work and excerpts from a lot of different, you know, since 2011, honestly, maybe even before that. So a lot of work in our rep.
And we're almost up on a break here, but I think people might be surprised that there's so much work that goes into improv. I mean, I think improv people think, oh, you just show up and you do something. But no.
That's a lifetime of building what you want to say musically and building what who you are, you know, and also just making yourself vulnerable in that moment. It takes practice to be comfortable with it.
To feel like I don't have a game plan here. Right?
Not at all.
I have to respond to what's going on around me.
Exactly, both musically and emotionally. Yeah.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Michelle Dorrance, founder, artistic director of Dorrance Dance. She's a 2015 MacArthur Fellow, a 2014 Alpert Award winner, 2013 Jacob's Pillow Dance Award winner. She's in Philadelphia. In fact, Dance Affiliates presenting Dorrance Dance at the Prince Theater Wednesday, that's tomorrow, the 2nd of December through Sunday the 6th. And we have set up a stage here. In fact, thanks to Stage Step, they have set up a small stage here. And right after this break, Michelle Dorrance will show us some of what she's got. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Michelle Dorrance, our guest, tap dancing to a version of Radiohead's song, Everything in Its Place. She has been reinvigorating tap dancing for over a year now as a solo artist and through her company, Dorrance Dance. With her intricate footwork, her creative choreography, and innovative use of sound, rhythm, and music, she is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Too many things going on in my head. Well, our guest Michelle Dorrance is now over to my left here. We've got a small stage set up thanks to Stage Step, and she's going to demonstrate some things and tell us what you're doing. I'm going to toss it over to you, Michelle.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that was a good starting place. Everything in its right place is in 10-8, which I love odd time signatures. So I think one thing I'd like to sort of talk about inside of this little moment is kind of creating a groove in different time signatures. So one that I just heard inside of that I love, we're performing that this week. So if I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, 1. It's kind of hard to count and do it at the same time. But so this can be repeated. And I can, yeah, a little mess up at the end. But so like we can create a groove and then come have a break come out of it. This is one of the things that we do often when we're working in any kind of repetitive rhythmic pattern, that kind of thing. And then at the very end, you heard something that we do quite a bit, which is a roll. So we have some of the same language as drummers when we talk about our, so this with this idea, two different tones. A toe and a heel, literally toe, heel, toe, heel, toe, heel. That's our double stroke roll. So if I want to roll this a little faster. Continue all the way to. And a man who really developed a lot of rudiments that are similar to drum rudiments is a man named Steve Kondos, who is from Philadelphia.
You go. That's terrific.
Well known as a part of the Kondos brothers. So I mentioned Steve in part because there's a legacy in a lot of different major metropolitan areas of that, but he was the guy who literally developed a lot of tap rudiments as drum rudiments. So another roll I'll demonstrate for you, our four count roll that we call paddle and roll. So what you heard there was, but you can use different parts of the paddle and roll as your downbeat.
Oh, wow.
Or. And each one, because of the tone, sounds a little bit different.
Now, what listeners obviously can't see is me looking at you, Michelle, but you are so loose.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be. I understand that. But just the fact that your feet are doing all the things that they are doing, but the rest of your body is so fluid, so loose.
I think part of, or at least my personal relationship to the form, that I really love inside of a dancer I admire, and I think this has a lot to do with Savion being a huge influence.
Savion Glover.
Savion Glover. And this is, to steal a term that my tap teacher Gene Medler, my mentor, always used. He used to always say, the form follows the function. So tap dance, of course, there's a lot of choreography in something you would see on the Broadway stage. But one of the most organic things I love about the form is that in order to get this sound, I have to move my body this way to get it. Sure, I could decide to stylize it.
And you're sliding your foot across,
yeah, I'm using
across the board there.
Sliding my heel across the board. Or if I'm going to do something like this, I'm jumping in the air, my arms go up in order to help me get up. That step is called a wing because doing it repeatedly, or
like a bird in a way.
Yeah, exactly. You have to use your body to get off the floor, hang in the air a little bit near the floor, and come back down. So the look of the form comes from the execution of the music. And so that's another thing I really love about the work.
And how important are heels?
Oh, if we're going to, this is a good lead into this next segment. I love using my heel. Like I maybe overuse it because it's the base. It's the lowest sound except for like a toe knock. But this is, if I'm going to use a heel in the paddle and roll I just showed you, I can use it lightly or like that idea. It's an incredible counterpoint in that using that low range against a much higher mid or treble sound. I love that. I love that counterpoint. I love the tonal range inside of it.
And what about your shoes? We were inspecting them before going on the air. So these are basically kind of Oxford looking flat
they are.
Shoes.
These are Capizio. They're K360s. I prefer the wing tip. I like the stitching, but I also like the way it feels in my foot. And even though I've recently been given a new pair of shoes by them, I haven't broken them in to the point where I like the sound as much. So you have to, breaking them in is part of also getting your sort of your voice. So these are two different shoes. One is 2 years old and one is 5 years old. So they both sound very different and have their own idiosyncratic things happening. But I'd say like 6 months into a pair of shoes is like the sweet spot.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So maybe next time I'm here, I'll have my new pair broken in.
And do you think of yourself as a storyteller? I mean, you're a tap dancer, you're a choreographer. Hmm. Are you also a storyteller?
Yeah, I mean, I think the form itself is such a storyteller. That we, you know, we really, in executing the form, we stand on the backs of those who, you know, sacrificed and innovated and pushed through racial barriers and pushed through economic barriers. And also, you know, the form fights the art versus entertainment, you know, problem. And there, you know, so many folks who sacrificed and pushed and were never credited are also then mocked or, you know, there's, I don't know, I feel like there's a long overdue respect that needs to be given to the form. So now I've lost your original question. What were we talking about?
I forget myself. But I'm intrigued. This I guess struggle that tap dancers have.
Yeah.
Is it entertainment? I mean, we do associate right. it with things. I know you've done some dancing in Las Vegas, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
And you were part of Stomp.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, not that is an art, but it's sort of finding that.
Yeah, I'm finding the art inside of the work, I think, regardless of what you're doing or what you're employed to do. But I think in exploring the form, storytelling, that's what you were talking
that's
about.
Right.
I think we are constantly telling a story in that so much of our vocabulary and style is rooted in very specific dancers through the history of tap that literally changed the technique of the form. And that is amazing. So there's a storytelling going on inside of what you choose if you're improvising or choreographing, what you're choosing, what vocabulary you choose to use. And then one of the things I'm most inspired to do with my dancers is explore their individual characters, their natural characters. Or, you know, I used to work with a dancer who was 6'8". I mean, like, my gosh, like, I just wanted to play with his body. I couldn't believe he could execute the things he could with how lanky he was. And he was an incredible technician. So, but there's that. I mean, you put a 6'8" guy with a bunch of, you know, no one's over 5'7". The juxtaposition in and of itself creates a story or creates a character. So there's, I'm constantly wanting to explore that. And then also exploring storytelling through the way different dancers execute different movement. That's always really fun for me.
And I'm curious, too, when you're waking up in the morning and first beginning to tap, are there things you do? Are there certain exercises you do to get your feet limber?
Yeah, now that I'm getting a little older, everything cracks. So, I mean, I could probably, yeah, I'd give you a couple cracks just
there
standing
we go. I think
here.
We heard some
but,
cracks,
yeah. No, yeah, lately I'm stretching my calves more than anything now, in part because I've also just recently started boxing again, so I'm jumping rope. But yeah, very rhythmic, and here we are in Philadelphia. But yeah, so there's a few things that I'm doing first thing in the morning, literally just rolling through my feet. Like you said before, they're flat, and they crack and need a little love in the morning. So I should definitely warm up more than I do, but I'm mostly focusing on my lower body. And then also, like, getting a good core and lower back warm-up allows you to use your legs and body any way you want to.
And do you have a favorite move or maybe a favorite thing that you want to demo thus?
Favorite
and
then, move, let me think.
And then we'll put you back in your other seat, and I know there's some folks that want to
You know, I'll
us.
Tell you this. We were talking about rolls earlier, so I'll do a 7-count roll, which is something that I'm, you know, been obsessed with for years. So if this is our 4-count roll, like I said before, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So there's our 4. Our 7, 1. And it also rolls over the phrase. So I say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3. 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Yeah. So I also love the way the different tones roll over the phrase.
And is that why you've been obsessed with that rhythm? I mean, it is.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love it. Yeah. And you can play with different things. I could use my heel. Or. Yeah. You can. There's so much inside of it that you can play with. Yeah.
Very exciting. Well, why don't you go back to your other chair here and again talking with Michelle Dorrance. And she has brought her dance company, Dorrance Dance, to the Prince Theater here in Philadelphia beginning tomorrow, Wednesday the 2nd through Sunday the 6th at the Prince Theater in Philadelphia. And again, thanks to Stage Step Dance Theater and Performing Arts Flooring for providing the dance platform. And we might have you go back a little bit later on in the show.
Sure.
And to our listeners, join the conversation. Call us at 1-888-477 877-974-9999. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Now that you've had a chance to hear our guest, Michelle Dorrance. Let me get Cletus to join the conversation. And Cletus, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Marty, as always.
Well, you're welcome.
Awesome stuff there.
Yeah, pretty great, eh?
Oh, terrific. I read the whole story in the Sunday paper and also your digest notice on email. So I'm going to be at the show. You know, I used to date a woman who taught dance, ballet, tap, and jazz, and she taught me all the rudiments back in the, or your word, Michelle, back in the 90s. And I've been interested at the very least all along. But I also play and sing Irish music. I sing on, and by the way, you guys both have very nice timber in your voices on the air.
Thank you.
But I play and sing Irish music, and I took some of the step lessons, you know, the quadrille type stuff, the mm-hmm. two-hand and four-hand, they call them. But I never really, well, let me see if I could just ask you. If
sure.
you've ever, pardon the pun, taken stepped into the step dancing, the Irish step dancing.
Cletus, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And there is a connection, is there not?
A huge one, yeah. I mean, and honestly, I had the opportunity to be a part of a show in the late 90s called Common Ground, and it was a combination of tap dancing, Irish step dancing, and clogging. And it really did show the connection between those three forms, because people forget that, you know, clogging and tap dancing sort of have the same roots. And then just sort of went in their separate directions. I learned enough Irish step dancing in that show that the choreographer, in a pinch, called me in this aforementioned performance in Vegas. I had to be an Irish step dancer for an evening in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So I knew enough of the rudiments of the form, and I could execute it, you know, with enough integrity to be a part of this little line of dancers. Never a soloist, but, you know, the roots of tap dance are Irish and African. And, you know, there's a lot that happened when the drum was taken away from the slave, a lot of body percussion and foot percussion. And then there's also, you know, the story of the only whites that were quartered with slaves were Irish indentured servants. So this cultural happening in the South, and then, of course, in the Five Points neighborhood in New York, that's another sort of melting pot with a lot of, you know, African Americans and Irish dancers. That was being innovated in, you know, 200 years ago. It was incredible. So, yeah, Irish. And you look, if you look at... honestly, there's illustrations of a man named Master Juba. His name is William Henry Lane. He's one of basically the first famous, world-famous tap dancers. And he had an African-American man. He had a rival who was an Irish step dancer. But what Lane did was use elements of Irish and buck and wing, which was what tap dance was called back then, and was really creating a new style. You see illustrations of him, though, and his posturing looks very similar to Irish dancing. It's really interesting to see.
Well, when I think of Irish dancing, I think of the feet going, but the body is
totally still. Exactly.
Totally upright, not the kind of movement that I associate with you.
Right. Well, and you take a look at the way African dance, literally the movement, and then also syncopated rhythms, fusing with a more traditional, very straight rhythms in European and Irish, you know, music. And then you look at the footwork combined with other, you know, leg and footwork from African dance. And you can really, truly see the roots of both of those forms. So Cletus, yeah, you know, learning Irish dance actually really helped me understand the roots of certain vocabulary we still use today. You know, the Irish dancers will call something a treble, and we would say a shuffle. Yeah, there are direct correlations.
You mentioned this is some of the history of tap, about taking the drum away, and this was under slavery in this country, where slaves were not allowed to use drums. I think they felt that they were communicating with each other.
It was a big communication for slave uprisings, which is incredible. The rhythmic communication was, and that also, like, that has everything to do with the way I think rhythmic forms are really revolutionary and communicate
and defiant,
so much more.
Right?
Exactly. I completely agree with you.
But what happened was that the slaves, in their defiant way, created dance as a way to, as a kind of an outlet, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's a necessity. I mean, I think that's what anyone who wants to acknowledge the form, whether what you know the form, so many people say, what about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers? What about Gene Kelly? They're beautiful. But the origins of this form and the people who really pushed it forward are not named and are not known, you know, early on. And I think always acknowledging where that comes from is so important. But also, like, you know, this wasn't for fun. It was for a need. You know, talk about expression and a form developing because of a need to an outlet, and also a form of communication again.
But also something that grew out of grief, out of loss, mm-hmm. about being enslaved, about being oppressed. I mean, the Irish, many came here and faced discrimination or had to sort of leave their country because of starvation. Obviously, slaves coming here against their will, being
horrific
forced.
Horrific circumstance.
Absolutely. But we think of TAP as so joyous.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's one of the first projects upon an opportunity I had to create an evening link work with collaborators was the Blues Project. And Toshi Regan, who I collaborated with, the composer of that project, she asked me why tap dance and the blues. Like, everyone knows, you know, jazz music and tap dance are sort of brother sister moving through the 20th century. And what struck me the most about the history of tap dance and the blues is they both come from the plantation. They both come up from a place of such oppression, and they both become expressions of joy. And how is that possible? Why is that transcendence inside of that form? Like, what – talk about the strength and character and, I don't know, humanity and the people mm-hmm. who created and expressed it first. So that moves me, and also our relationship to it constantly calls upon that. So, you know, because gosh, tap dance can be loud and aggressive and can communicate tremendous amounts of anger. And it can also be the softest, subtlest, most beautiful thing. And then, of course, exuberant and joyful.
And we're almost up on a break, but also the body is an instrument.
I mean, exactly.
You know, when there was no access to instruments.
So powerful.
Michelle Dorrance is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We are talking about tap dancing. She won a MacArthur Fellow this year. She's also won a number of other awards for her work, for her choreography. She performs, she teaches, choreographs throughout the world. And she's been doing some demonstration for us and talking a bit about the history of tap dance. Also her interpretation, her approach to tap dance as well. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. That's our guest, Michelle Dorrance, in a heel-heavy tap dance, and we are talking about her career as a tap dancer, her number of awards as well. She's been doing some performances for us, and I should add that Dance Affiliates presents Dorrance Dance at the Prince Theater in Philadelphia starting tomorrow. That's December 7th, running through Sunday the 6th at the Prince Theater. And again, thanks to Stage Step, they set up this board so our guests could perform. And again, you can join the conversation, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm wondering how much just hip-hop has inspired tap or is maybe changing or has influenced tap?
You know what? I'm going to reverse that and talk about how tap influenced hip-hop, and then
Fair
we can
enough.
Come back around because it does, definitely does. It's very cyclical. I mentioned the Nicklaus Brothers earlier because they were very iconic, both rhythm tap, what someone would call a rhythm tap dancer, but also a flash dancer. And they did so much kind of unbelievable acrobatic work and, you know, gigantic flips into a split, some work when they were down on the floor. Yeah. That the early B-boys, which predates hip-hop, so breaking, coming out of rocking, which not a lot of people even talk about the history of these forms, but from the funk era dances, you have rocking moving into breaking, which, so, you know, it was first a dance that was done up top, then you come down to the floor, and the early B-boys and, you know, breakers, B-boys and B-girls, would imitate some of the moves that the Nicklaus Brothers did.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I think a lot of early hip-hop dancers cite tap dance footage and kung fu footage as influencing a lot of their stylistic choices,
That's
which
so
I
great.
Think is great. But So, I mean, and you can look at the footwork and a lot of that early, you know, early breaking alone, and it's so rhythmic and it's so intricate. Just because you can't hear it doesn't mean it doesn't have a relationship to it. And you look at vernacular dance through the 20s, both the boogie, Lindy, all those ideas moving immediately into both early hip hop and house. So that now those forms are influencing the way we might move as tap dancers, or that even contemporary dancers are moving now. There's so much hip hop technique and house technique, you know, and also funk era dances like popping. There's all this technique that has moved back into other forms that might, you know, predate those forms. So, and one something I could say is not so much hip hop, in part because funk had such a huge influence on what the rhythmic base and root of hip hop is. Same thing with the blues, of course. But what I can say is that funk music leading into hip hop music has influenced our generation so much in that, like, you know, what you might associate with tap dance is a swing sensibility. Of course, there's a very even, you know, there's also Latin traditions. There's many other different traditions. But Gregory Hines first.
Oh, absolutely.
And then followed by Savion Glover really revolutionized our rhythmic sensibility as tap dancers. So you don't hear a lot of tap dancers with a funk sensibility until Gregory. And he changed the game. Like, he rhythmically and musically changed the game. He started dancing to contemporary funky music in the 80s. I mean, some of it now is like terrible synths and stuff like that. We're all like, oh my gosh, Gregory. But it's very him. But the music he was making with his feet is still so fresh. Like, we all still have this relationship to it where we're like, oh gosh, that was incredible. So, like, if you just played an audio recording of Gregory Hines right now, any funk drummer would sit there and go, oh yeah. I mean, any musician,
right.
Because he was such a great musician. He used space so well, he used syncopation so well. So, I would say that is sort of current contemporary music's context is, I think, I don't know, I would say there's a cyclical relationship and influence in both directions.
Is it unusual that to have women tap dancing? I mean, what you name some of these, you know, these iconic figures.
Right, I name mostly men.
Yeah.
I know, that's right. And, I, you know, I should also mention Jenny Ligon. I mentioned Brenda Bufalino and Diane Walker. But, Cora LaRed, a woman no one knows. Like, you know, there are all these incredible dancers and rhythmic and, you know, stylists. But rarely was a woman seen, and this is also just sexism inside of our entertainment culture, which we're now well aware of with that, like, Sony leak. Gosh, learning that stuff pisses me off so
gracious.
Much. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry.
That's
tangent.
Okay.
But that plays into the fact that, you know, historically, you have a male soloist. There's a term called a soubrette, which was a female soloist from the line of girl dancers that would dance in front of the line. So you have a chorus line that is traditionally women. You have male soloists, and then you have a soubrette. Yeah. A woman I know who's 94, living in Harlem, incredible, was an Apollo showgirl, toured with Cab Calloway, incredible vocalist and dancer. She was a soubrette, but she was also the star of many soundies, which are like short, black and white films that you could put a nickel in a bar and watch one or something like that. But Mabel Lee, she was a person who really hipped me to the fact that back then it was very rare to be a female soloist in the form. So I think what we are seeing now is, a kind of equity. There's you can have a soloist in any direction, and I think that allows so much freedom inside the form as well.
You were in Stomp for a couple of years.
That's right.
Was that a turning point for you?
You know what? I just learned so much from being in that show. It was a turning point that I got injured during that show and realized I broke my foot.
Well, it was, I mean, athletic and exuberant.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the truth is I was tap dancing when I broke my foot. But I think it was the impact of doing Stomp and tap dancing at the same time, like a lot of impact. But it woke me up to the fact that I really needed to pursue my own work while I was still young, young-ish. But I learned such a tremendous amount about ensemble work inside of Stomp as a show. And the ideas leading into the rhythmic compositions were made up of so many different parts, very polyrhythmic. And it's really fun to explore that inside of tap dancing, and that only encouraged me to do it further. The creators of that show are brilliant, and all the cast members.
I do want to play another piece that you did. This is the Blues Project. Jacob's Pillow goes back to 2013.
Oh, yeah.
And here you are dancing to the music performed live by folk blues composer Toshi Reagan and her band Big Lovely. Mm. Let's give it a listen.
I know woman, she stays. me what you want for. Stop. Why you always want more? Stop. Your way is your freedom. And I just can't stop my falling down.
Yeah. Oh, that's just terrific.
Gosh, I could listen to her all day.
Oh, but listen, I mean, there's so much energy in that. And you hear the instruments, you hear her voice, you hear the feet all sort of working in conjunction, but also playing off each other.
Exactly. And in that particular piece, that's choreographed by myself, Dormisha Sumbri Edwards, and Derek Grant. So there were three segments in there that were actually three different couples dancing.
Right.
So in even that, what a collaboration. Three choreographers, which is essentially three rhythmic composers as well, because we're tap dancing and composing music. And then Toshi Regan and the entire band. So that was such a special collaboration for all of us. And to this day, performing the show really brings us like incredible inspiration and joy.
Well, I'd love to have you do a little improv for us. So
gladly.
Why don't you get you over there? I'm just going to quickly reintroduce you, Michelle Dorrance, our guest, founder, artistic director of Dorrance Dance. She's won a number of awards, including most recently a MacArthur Fellow. And she's brought her dance company, Dorrance Dance, to Philadelphia to the Prince Theater. We have some callers that want to join us. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Michelle and I were talking during the break. She's going to do a little improv for us. God, that was terrific. Thank you so much. I wish we had a gigantic auditorium here that could give you applause. And it was, I mean, from the subtlety to the really sort of in-your-face kind of performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a moment like this, I'm like, what am I going to do? So you just sort of follow what you're interested in rhythmically.
And you're catching your breath here.
Sorry.
I mean, this is, no, this is, it's a lot of work,
it
right?
It is, but it, I don't know. It inspires and motivates itself. I think that you're moving to create music is an incredibly visceral, and it's the best thing. I don't know why not everybody does.
Well, looking at you, I wish everyone did do it. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Lisa calling us from Wynwood. Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So, Michelle, this is very exciting. I studied dance as a little girl, and many years later had the pleasure of going to see Brenda Buffalino and Honey Coles and the American Tap Dance Orchestra, and it reunited that passion, and I loved hearing you talk about tap dancers as musicians. It was really the first time I mean, you're a percussionist, you know? So,
exactly.
Could you speak to, are you familiar with them, ADTO, and how your work is you know, harmonious with that rhythm tap tradition.
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, Brenda, who I mentioned before, Honey was, I mentioned my teacher, Gene Medler. He was the first major influence on my teacher, Gene, that made him come back. I remember he went to a tap festival in 1990, I want to say. And so I'm like, what, 10, 11? And he comes back and goes, we're changing everything. So his relationship to Honey changed everything about his approach to the form. And so, you know, he taught us what he learned in this intensive with Honey Coles. And that, I mean, so I have, you know, I never got to meet Honey before he passed away, which is a huge shame because he impacted me through Gene so directly. Wow. And then, of course, Brenda became someone that Gene ended up, you know, bringing in to work with the company. It was right after I graduated from high school, so I missed this opportunity. But I got to develop my own relationship with her in New York City. And recently, I was very lucky to have an artist in residence, you know, a period of residency with the Joyce Theater at their studios, Danny Studios. And Brenda, we were basically assigned, you know, we're requested to have a choreographic advisor. And this was a collaboration between myself and Nicholas Van Young, another stomper, but great percussionist, unbelievable, masterful tap dancer. And we're working with this new technology that he's been developing. And Brenda was really a pioneer for some kind of weird stuff. I mean, yeah. Brenda was an experiment. She was looping tap dance, I think, before anybody, you know, using these ideas in the 70s. So I thought to myself, Brenda is the one. She's the person who must be our advisor for this process. And we were honored that she accepted that call. So I have a direct relationship to Brenda and a very close lineage with Honey through Gene. And, you know, basically, I think Gene is sort of a part of that approach to the floor. Honey was both light-footed and beautiful. He was part of a class act with Charlie Atkins. They were a duo back in the, you know, the 40s, and then also incredibly clean and fast. So both of their rhythmic traditions have a lot to do with the way we're moving forward. And the American Tap Dance Orchestra is really, you know, one of the few companies that we know that toured nationally and internationally as a tap company. So this is like the ground that we're on now is not entirely unexplored, but it's rarely explored by tap dancers. And so I am very grateful for the groundwork that ATDO laid, and then the ATDF, the American Tap Dance Foundation, has a center in New York where we rehearse all the time, now directed by Tony Vogue. So, yeah, it comes full circle.
That's
small
great.
World.
Lisa, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And we are almost out of time, but you mentioned LaVon Robinson when you came in.
Oh, LaVon.
Who
is
a Philadelphia tap dancer.
Oh, my gosh, LaVon, what a beautiful, beautiful stylist and musician as a dancer, and a gentleman. Like, I think that's another thing that our generation were punks, so we need to kind of regain the class that was once a part of the tradition of the form.
Michelle Dorrance, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in, for talking to us,
thank
performing
you so
as
much.
Well. And she has brought Dorrance Dance to the Prince Theater, and they'll be performing tomorrow, the 2nd of December through Sunday the 6th. And also thanks to Stage Step for the platform that we use. Also thanks to our engineers here, Joyce Lieberman and Al Banks, for setting up the studio for today's dance performance. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about the program. We'll probably post some pictures on our Facebook page. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.